There you go. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. We have on Skype today Joe Rogowski. He is the Director of Player Health for the NBA Players Association. And joining us also via Skype, Dr. Josh Yellen. Also in studio, we'll have Nicole Casha, one of the Masters of Athletic Training students at the University of Houston. We are talking again about keeping NBA athletes' health a priority. And Joe is pretty much an expert in that since he's the Director of NBA Player Health. So without much further ado, Dr. Yellen.
Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah. Joe, how are you? Let's start off with getting everybody up to speed here. Give our listening audience a little bit of a background on how you got to where you are now. So currently you are the Director of Player Health, is that right? Or is it Director of Sports Medicine for the NBA Players Association, correct?
Yes. My title is Director of Sports Medicine for the NBPA, which a lot of people don't realize there's two different branches. There's the NBA side and then there's the Players Association side. And for many, the Players Association for the NBA has never had someone on their side sort of help with the communication and the education on the players' front. So that's sort of the role that I took on this last July. My previous experience and sort of how I got to where I am now is I worked with the all the way back, I did my undergrad in athletic training at DePaul University in Indiana. And then from there, I interned for a couple of years. One of the teams I did intern with was the Orlando Magic in 2002. Did an internship as a strength and conditioning coach with them. So the nice thing is about my athletic training background is it gave me some versatility where I could do strength and conditioning, athletic training. Worked with the Magic for a year, then went and received my master's at Central Florida in cardiac physiology, which was which still to this day is a pretty unique master's program, a unique experience. So it gave me sort of something different than everybody else had. So that the Magic actually had a head job open up, and I applied for it and was, lucky enough to get it. And one of the reasons why was because of that specialization in cardiac physiology. Worked 8 years with the Orlando Magic as their head strength and conditioning coach. We had some really successful teams, worked with a few Hall of Fame players. And then from there, received a job offer from the Houston Rockets to be their director of science and research 2 years ago, 3 years ago. My wife and her family being from Houston, it just made a lot of sense. And we moved to Houston, I moved to Houston and then worked for the Rockets for the last 2 years. And then this past summer, this position came up and they asked me if I'd be interested in it. And it just sort of worked out where, it's an open canvas from my end. So I'm addressing issues that I think are important and helping our players, overall health.
So let's go back in time a little bit. You came out of undergraduate from DePaul, correct?
Yes, Indiana.
And that was in the internship model. And did you take any time off in between undergraduate and graduate school, or did you just go straight in for your master's?
Yeah, so I took some time. So when I graduated, I had really no idea what I wanted to do. Even though I had my athletic training certification, I was really nervous about what my next step was. So that's why I just started volunteering myself. And so my first right out of college, I did an internship with the Buffalo Bills for 2-3 months. Then that was over. Then I was really lost. And then started working at a physical therapy clinic. And worked there for a year as a just as an assistant, learning the physical therapy side of the world, which was huge as far as my development as an athletic trainer, because it allowed me to see things from a different perspective. So I did that for a year, and then after that was over, that's when I received the internship with the Orlando Magic. After a year with the Magic, then I was lost again, didn't know what I was going to do. So then I said, all right, I might as well stay in Florida, work on getting my master's. And that's when I applied for the master's program. At the same time, to pay for my master's program, I worked as a teacher at the local high school because they were in dire need of athletic trainers. So that sort of paid for my master's program, is being a dual sort of a teacher slash athletic trainer for the high school, which opens up a lot of doors. Especially in the state of Florida, everybody there is looking for athletic trainers. So I was able to be put to the top of the list as a teacher. I had preference because of that background.
Okay, so you bring up a couple interesting stops along the way. And one of the things I want to address is you took a gap in between undergraduate and graduate school. And what led you down the path to get a master's degree in cardiac physiology?
Well, unfortunately, the truth of that story was just sort of luck. I really didn't know what I wanted to get my master's in. I just knew I wanted to get my master's. And so I called up, it was probably one of the first numbers in the book for bioenergetics. I didn't even know what bioenergetics was at the time. And the professor at University of Central Florida just sort of talked me into taking his classes. And I really had nothing else going, so I said, sure. And so I didn't know it was cardiac physiology and all that implied. So I just stuck with it. And, you know, thankfully I did, because honestly, that's one of the main factors that sort of put me in the position I am today. Being one of the few athletic trainers, strength and conditioning coaches that have a background in cardiac physiology and cardiac health for athletes.
And so it makes you, that combination allows you to fit a particular niche, which is becoming more and more important. And the times that you and I have talked, you've made the, essentially the, I don't want to say the equation, but the connection of, you know, cardiac health is the concussion epidemic in the NBA that concussions are in the NFL. So can you expand a little bit more on how you're taking your education, obviously in athletic training, you're combining that with strength conditioning, you're infusing the education that you've got in your master's degree, and tell the audience, you know, what kinds of things have you learned and developed along the way?
Yeah, so one of the issues that I noticed for early on in my MBA, in my professional career, was that and having my background in cardiac physiology, we have specialties when it comes to athletes in a multitude of areas, whether it's orthopedic, sports medicine, you know, whatever it is, endocrinology. Like, there's all these athlete specific areas. Well, there were sort of lacking in the cardiology side of things, and, you know, being sort of in the trenches with the players and the trainers and the doctors, I sort of got to a different perspective of, all right, maybe there's a better method of doing this for athletes. So I sort of put together what I learned and molded that into the athlete world. So I really picked apart, what kind of equipment we used for our athletes, what kind of technicians we use for our athletes. Everything has to be turnkey, seamless, because, you know, these guys are being pulled 20 different ways. So, you know, how can we make it a simpler process and a more efficient process, and have the right, you know, people that are specialized in capturing the images, the sonographers, have them specialize with athletes, the equipment, and the protocols. Which ones can we have specialized for athletes? So that was something that that interested me and intrigued me. And so that was one of the things that I've been working on, and then also getting the research off of it to justify, have the research sort of guide how we screen our athletes and, you know, why we're doing it, and basically answer all those questions. And, you know, and just putting myself out there and sort of just talking with a whole bunch of different individuals that are experts in this area and evolving, you know, it's been an evolving process. And recently, you know, as a director of the Players Association, I was able to put together the retired players screening program, which we just finished our second city last week in Atlanta. The first being Houston on December 12th, where one of the issues I always found in getting to know a lot of the NBA players and seeing them retire and becoming friends with them is, you know, once they're done in the NBA, their healthcare it's not at the same level. And a lot of these guys struggle with cardiovascular disease, being bigger players, being, you know, a lot of them overweight because they're done playing now and not eating healthy. And then a lot of them, unfortunately, have orthopedic issues, which don't allow them to exercise. So you know, that was one of the things that when I came to the union, I expressed interest in is putting together a cardiovascular screening program for these retired guys. That was very comprehensive, everything from blood work to EKG to blood pressure to echocardiograms to carotid scans to sleep apnea. And it's gone really well. And now we're also data mining all that information. So that now, you know, after a few years of this, we could look at trends and look at mortality rates of players, you know, and use it to educate our current players of, hey, this is why you guys, once you're done playing, you just can't stop, you know, exercising or eating healthy. Cause look, this is, you know, this is the trends that we've seen. So it's been a constantly evolving process. We've got with the retired player screening program that we've put together, it's gotten huge traction. I've got more cities now that have a lot of players in that city that have called me up, you know, where the demand is so high right now. It's just trying to keep up with that. But that's sort of where I took, you know, my cardiac background in grad school, and just kept working on working it and seeing, like you said, a niche, and then addressing that niche that I saw could be done better and more efficiently from an athlete's perspective.
Right. So let's go back again. You came out with your athletic training degree. Did you also come out dually credentialed, or getting your strength conditioning certificate was something you did along the way?
Yeah, I received my strength and conditioning degree along the way. So I was initially certified as an athletic trainer, interned with the Buffalo Bills as an athletic trainer. And then during that time, I was working in a physical therapy clinic. I was just trying to, you know, I really did just to make myself more marketable. I always enjoyed strength and conditioning and was excited about strength and conditioning. And so, you know, I just looked at, hey, I'm young. Now's the time to get as many certifications as I can just to make myself, you know, more marketable when that job one day it came around. Now, did I ever envision that I'd be a full-time strength and conditioning coach out of college? Absolutely not. It just sort of worked that way. And the only reason it worked that way was because I ended up getting that certification. So I guess you never know what direction you're going to go. So that was sort of my thinking. So it was better to have everything and just see where life took me.
And so, you know, another interesting point that you bring up, and I kind of feel like you were probably, you know, on the forefront of this, was this involvement of you with other allied healthcare professionals. And now, you know, they're the fancier, the sexy term to that is interprofessional education. So, you know, what's your thought about that, right? You came out of athletic training school, and then you did some other things, and you worked with PTs and other healthcare professionals. Tell us how that helped develop you as a professional.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most crucial things that I did personally was just to get myself in as many different fields as I could. And it's really benefited me now. And honestly, I think that's one of the positions or one of the reasons why I'm in the position now with the MBA is because I know how to talk to strength coaches. I know how to talk to trainers. I know how to talk to doctors and physical therapists because we all learn different ways of approaching our athletes. And so that gives me sort of the flexibility to understand where someone's coming from. So I can put out a lot of fires before they even happen because I know where those individuals are coming from. So I would say the things you could, and I worked, I there wasn't a sport I turned down when I was in my early 20s. I worked everything from rugby to soccer to basketball, baseball, football. Like there was no stone left unturned in my regard. So that anytime I had a job offer or someone was looking, I had experience in that field to some degree or level. I even worked volunteered for marathons and things like that. And the other thing is networking. You don't know who you're going to meet along the way. So not only are you getting experience in an area that you would have known, but there's brilliant people in all different fields. And just to, you know, just to talk with them and tap into them and see where they're coming from really was a valuable asset that, again, today allows me to talk on many different levels. Now I've been having to get in the tech world. So I've been talking to all these different tech guys and, you know, and sometimes they don't really understand the world of sports. So I could sometimes explain from, you know, someone who hasn't been in the trenches how yes, that sounds all good, but the reality is in this environment doesn't work. So that's an area that I've been tackling right now. And so you got to put yourself out there if you want to, if you really want to grow and sort of write your own path and make your own destiny. Because, you know, there's a lot of people out there doing that. And, you know, so if you're not, you're really setting yourself up for a disadvantage. So that's why I just, anytime I can network with somebody or meet somebody or go shadow someone for a day, I took advantage of that.
Okay, so now let's jump forward to, you know, you got to the Buffalo Bills and you did some internships, and then you went with the Orlando Magic, right? Was that also internship? And then, you know, you got a job offer out of that. And mm-hmm. So start us on the path of, you know, what you started to learn, the lessons that you started to take in, and how that started to lead you to where you are right now.
Yeah, and so like my 10 years in the NBA, really, I've really changed a lot. And from what I thought was important, what really is important, you know, when you come in and you're young, you're very go-getter, you want to leave no stone unturned. And, you know, it's sort of, you know, it's sort of a self-discovery. You're trying to figure out what works. And I remember looking back, I look at some of the older strength coaches that have been around and thinking, man, a lot of these guys, they just don't do a lot of other stuff. You know, they have their four, you know, tricks and that's it. And here's me like trying to reinvent the wheel. Well, what I've come to realize is I've gotten older is the longer you've been in it, you realize what works and what doesn't work. And I, you know, I look at some of the stuff I did my first couple of years. I'm like, man, I'm lucky to have my job still. Cause I was asking my players to do some crazy stuff that now I would not ask them to. So I sort of understand that, you know, you're sort of trying to teach yourself and learn what's important. So I think that's one of the big things is being able to separate what's important, what's not important, and there's a lot of fluff out there, especially in our world, especially with all the wearable stuff nowadays, you know, from Fitbit to whatever, you know, to whatever you have, and being able to decipher what actually makes a difference, even though it sounds really cool and they have a cool marketing video, is, you know, what actually at the end of the day puts my athlete in the best situation to succeed and be healthy. And even if it doesn't sound sexy, and I always preach this, you know, is the biggest thing that I saw to athletes being healthy is their strength and conditioning. If you give me a player that's bigger, faster, stronger than everybody else, odds are he's going to be injured less than someone that's weak and frail. You know, and I've seen it for 10 years, and my strongest guys really never got hurt. Now, obviously, you're still going to get hurt. So that's why, like, I worry that because that's not the sexy thing, we get away from doing that and we try to reinvent the wheel and look at these things that maybe only make a 2% difference, where maybe something like the player being stronger and body being prepared makes a 75% difference. So it's being able to keep in perspective what's important and what gives you the most bang for your buck. And a lot of it comes with time too. And being time efficient is crucial. So I remember my first time with the Magic, I had a 3-month plan set out, hour each day for each guy. And after like the first 2 weeks, I sort of knew that was ridiculous. And I threw that out because it's a constantly changing environment. Like every day it changes. So you have no idea what that next day is going to look like as far as guys going to come in hurt, sick, you know, what they're going to be fatigued. Coach changes up the schedule. So I had to be really flexible on the fly. And that's one of the things I always tell the younger strength coaches in the NBA is, listen, you just got to be flexible. Go with it. You can't take things too personally because you're just going to set yourself up. So if I got all offended that my 3-month progression for the NBA season wasn't followed to the T, I would have just set myself up for failure and just been awful. But I just went with the flow, and you roll with the punches, and you know, you just give what that day gives you. You take what that day gives you, and you know, you try to get the best you can, and you got to make it time efficient. And you know, many of my lifting workouts now, to you know, towards the end of my tenure in the league, were 20 to 30 minutes because I was efficient. I got my most bang for my buck. Whereas earlier on, I was probably 45 minutes to an hour. But I just through that experience And as I got a little more tenured, I saw these exercises are important. These ones I could do without. They would be great to do, but I just don't have the time. And this is probably the most important thing for our guys being healthy and successful.
Sure. So tell us how you're able to combine your athletic training knowledge and your strength conditioning knowledge and create a product that's unique for the area that you're in. You elaborated a little bit on it before, but give us...
My invention?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. So hasn't hit the... they demoed it at the NFL Combine, which I was excited to see. Some of the NFL teams got it. Basically, one of the areas that I found... And then this is just, I guess, sort of how I am. I look for a problem. Well, I notice problems, and then I try to think of a solution rather than just deal with it. And one of the issues, we always see with our athletes are guys that, well, I look at it from two sides, the physical therapy side and then for my athletes. Everybody, and one of the best exercises I've come to find with athletes and with, people in general is just being able to squat and control your squat and be strong. That solves a lot of issues from an injury standpoint. Now, some guys, especially in the NBA world, lack the flexibility to be able to do a squat, with loaded weight on the back and that sort. But such a great exercise. And I've seen where we in the physical therapy world or the athletic trainer world have tried to figure out ways to do that. Some of them being like a box step down and side box step downs and rear foot step downs and that sort. But what always aggravated me is it's very quad dominant. Even though we try to teach the greatest form, guys just inherently go very anterior. So my thinking was, well, a lot of my players have very, very, very weak hamstrings and glute muscles, butt muscles. So how can I address this and make sure that they're training that? And so one of the things I came up with is I took a slide board and I put it on a box, a step-up box. So it was sort of on an incline. And I attached it to the box. And so the guy would stand on the box and do a reverse reverse lunge. So his foot would slide down it. And it would be a completely 100% hamstring glute exercise when he comes back up. And he's able to keep form because normally he wouldn't be able to do it because his quads aren't strong enough. So this is sort of an assisted way of doing that. And, it's great in early rehab is one of the things I found because now they're doing an assisted reverse lunge and it's really focusing on those hamstrings and glutes, which are hard to do. But now from a sports performance side, my basketball players who couldn't normally load their backs with heavy weight are able to do this with an assisted method. And it really, my players have really raved about it. And they're actually ones very behind this because they've noticed the difference. It definitely hits that target area that we couldn't normally hit before unless we really squatted the heck out of them. So it was just something where I saw an issue. I sort of tried to think, all right, how can I fix this? And, came out, I tried a couple different type of options. None of those worked. And then I came up with this and it really worked great. And then we just expanded from there and did a whole series off of it of exercises. And I'm pretty proud of it. I should be coming out soon. Like I said, it's starting, I think 5 NBA teams have it right now, a couple NFL teams. So looks good.
And so what's it called?
the guy, so I asked the guy from Slideboard to make it for me, and he said, well, can I call it the Rogo, which is Rogowski, my last name. I go, by all means, go for it. So
so pretty soon we'll be looking for the Rogo coming out on the market.
Yeah, the Rogo 3-in-1. I asked the guy, the inventor is the guy of the Slideboard. He's the one that put it together for me because I sort of told him what it, so I think he's the guy that's selling it right now. So he asked if I could use my name, and I was like, go for it.
Great. So now let's get everybody up to speed here. Obviously, you're a data-driven person, and this taps into evidence-based practice. So what are some of the things that you're starting to see in the NBA players? And talk about when you were actively with the teams, and now talk about what you're seeing as, on the other side of the players' associations. Make some connections here in terms of the data and the evidence What types of trends are you seeing?
So I guess, you know, one of the things that everything's about injury and reducing injuries. So that's been an area that we've really focused on. Now there's a lot of athletic trainers now that are just going into the analytics world, because that's definitely an area that's in need. And so we actually at the Players Union hired a couple athletic trainers that have a background in analytics to look at the trend rates of injuries and that sort, and sort of see what the truth is out there. I know we have all these assumptions that maybe our guys are overtrained, or there's too many games going on, or you know whatever it is. So that's one of the things that we've been looking at in this last year, and trying to find out what is the truth. You know, how many ACLs do we have a year? How many, you know, and have they gone up? Achilles. That's actually one of the ones that we've seen an increase in of injuries, the Achilles. And now why? You know, is it the shoes? Is it, is it the schedule? You know, or is it the guy's lack of conditioning or training beforehand? So it's tough, right? You know, right when you try to answer one question, three other questions pop up off of that of, okay, why? And so you're sort of like an investigator, a CSI investigator, trying to piece this all together. And that's what we're in the process of now. Now, when I was with the team, I dealt with 15 guys, and it was a little bit easier, because I could really hone in on those guys. Now that I'm with the union, I'm looking at the league as a whole, and seeing, you know, what are the, you know, trying to figure out what the trends are, and working in unison with the NBA, because they have an equal interest in this as well. And that's the nice thing about player health, is everybody is on board with, hey, protecting our players and getting them healthy. So, you know, that's one of the things we've been working on, is trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with our guys, how does the schedule impact them, and the NBA has made great strides in that direction. What are some things, you know, that we could do from a team standpoint? You know, are there things education-wise? Because I know, like, when I was with a team, you're pretty much working 365 days a year on that team. And very rarely do you get to go to conferences and educational seminars in order to go visit experts in their field. The nice thing is, in this new position, that's really what I'm geared for doing. So I travel all the time and see experts in their area and try to figure out, you know, what the latest trends are and some cool things that they're playing around with. Check out tech companies and see what's down the road, so I can sort of prepare everybody, hey, this might be something of interest, and give them our feedback. So that's sort of how it's changed from a team of 15 to now I have a team of 500. And I guess another big part of it is raising awareness. Because often, you know, the trainers and strength coaches are overlooked in what they do in a schedule or for a team. So now I can sort of, you know, raise awareness of like, hey, you know, these are some of the things that are going on. I know you guys are asking to do this, but do realize that it's going to be difficult, because this is what a trainer is doing normally every day. This is what a strength coach is doing. So now to add X, Y, and Z, like, you're going to put a lot of stress and strain on them, and that's going to take a priority over what possibly those trainers and strength coaches think are more important. So, you know, it's sort of helping bridge that gap, and sort of using data to help steer that direction. I'm always a big advocate of data-driven research and why we do things. And so one of the things that, yeah, you know, I know is a constant debate in college is looking at, you know, cardiac screening athletes. You know, that if you want to stoke up a big conversation, do EKGs or not EKGs? And so one of my recommendations was, well, why don't we look at doing a research on this and let data drive us? Because it might say yes, it might say no, but until we do a big longitudinal study on, you know, if EKGs and in conjunction with echocardiograms are beneficial, we're just guessing right now. And we're just going with opinions, and that's never good. So let data drive where we're going. And same thing with retired players. You know, we could say all these players are every year we have multitude of high profile NBA players dying. Well, let's actually start looking at this and researching this, and let me start collecting the numbers on these retired guys. So I could, And the nice thing is now I can look at the hearts of retired players and compare that to our current players to see, all right, listen, this is what's happening after a guy's done playing. This is what happens to his heart. So rather than just guessing, we're using data and evidence research-based approach to steer our next direction.
And so going off of that, can you talk about, I don't know if you're able to do so without revealing a whole lot of personal information, but can you talk about some of the basic trends that you're seeing in, let's say, you know, lower extremity injuries, cardiac care, nutrition, et cetera?
Okay. Lower extremity injuries-wise, one of the things we find is Achilles. That's on an increase. And again, we're trying to figure out why. We've had.
You said that is on the increase, or that it's not.
It is. There have been more Achilles tendon ruptures in the last couple of years than there have been before. And again, it's why. There'd be a multitude of reasons for that. I don't think we're at the point by any means to say this is the reason why, or hey, it just might be an anomaly. That 2-year stretch. So we're continuing to look at that.
Based on the evidence that you have right now, is there anything coming to the surface now that you can expand on?
From the Achilles side?
Yeah.
I don't think anything as of right now. We're right now in the process of identifying the problem. I think that's where I sort of lean on my colleagues, is to present this information at the end of the year to the guys and say, hey guys, just this is what's going on, and get their feedback. Because I've come to realize there are a lot of different settings and different situations are reasons for that. So rather than jumping to conclusions, is let's talk about this with our 30 guys in the league. Let's talk about this and see where we go from there. But right now we're in the identifying process of what's going on. We haven't gotten to that next phase of, all right, how do we fix this stuff? We have ideas, but nothing worth, nothing that we can say, hey, this is it. We've seen, this is something I didn't realize, a lot of hip surgeries, hip injuries, that if you had asked me last year how many we've had, I would have really struggled to remember one. And now that looking at, the number of labral tear hip surgeries that we've been having, I've come to now realize that's a greater incidence in our players, and something that we're now looking at. And then, so the next phase is take that stuff and find the doctors in that area that are very credible, that are research driven in that area and specialize in that area, and have them look at it. And like I said, have the peers in the league, because they a lot of times know what's going on behind the scenes, and ask for their opinion. So now we're sort of trying to get input of, all right, guys, what do we think is going on? Any recommendations on how we can address this and that sort. From a cardiology standpoint, I know one of the things that the NBA just showed was, how EKG versus echo. And I think this is something we always knew, but now we sort of have the numbers or the research behind it, is, echocardiograms on this population are a lot better at detecting abnormalities than EKGs. And they're a lot more reliable and valid than the EKG alone. So that was one of the things that, they just published a paper looking at some of the trends from our guys at the combine, which is really, an interesting thing. And looking at numbers and seeing what normal echo sizes are for, say, the septum. Now we actually have a number on that. Mm-hmm. So, that, whereas before, a guy that might have hit that upper end number might have had to go, and see a specialist or get further screening, or might even be excluded. Although now that may not be the case, when you take into consider his height and weight, that might be normal for him. So that was one of the things from the cardiology side that we saw. Some of the other stuff that we're looking at is one of the things that I've been really interested in is looking at just hormone levels, which is harder. And I haven't found a good solution for that yet. That's practical in our setting. I know you know, blood tests, which we can't do, and saliva tests, you know, there's debates on that. But, you know, one of the big issues with, you know, I see with our guys is just the cortisol levels go up, the testosterone levels go down, especially with the travel and the fatigue of travel and the jet lag. So I think that's one of the big issues that our guys need to address, you know, lack of sleep, you know, whatever, you know, it is, you know, that testosterone is such a key to keeping our guys healthy. And that's why, like, when I train our guys, I always preach to them, I was like, listen, get in the weight room just so you could get that endorphin release, get that testosterone going, and you'll feel better, you know, and they all knew, like, they hated it, but once they, you know, got a good lift in for 20, 30 minutes, they felt better. And you know, they were able to get that testosterone flowing. So, you know, that's one of the areas that I'd really like to look at. So I've been talking to some endocrinologists and some people in that area of, you know, maybe figuring out a way to address that.
Yeah. And so are you starting to see any trends between male and female, pro and college? How far back are you going in age, high school, et cetera? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so I haven't really looked at females yet. We haven't gotten to that area from a cardiology side or from an injury side, just because, you know, I'm really immersed in the NBA world. We are looking back. I know there's a couple individuals out there trying to do studies on players of what their high school setting was, because you know the hypothesis out there that our guys, and I mean, this is sort of my feeling too, and I understand this, is, you know, a lot of these basketball players, and I'll just stay in the basketball world since I know that a little bit better, is a lot of these athletes are becoming so specialized at a younger age that they don't learn all the movement patterns of other sports. And, you know, I see that sort of with our guys, like a lot of the guys that just were really good at basketball at a young age, really, by the time they get to me, they have a lot of movement pattern issues that predisposes them to more injuries. So I'm a big fan of cross training, you know, at especially a younger age, you know, play multiple sports because they move so much better and have better movement patterns, are less injured when they're older. You know, I'll see a lot of the European players that have played multiple sports like soccer and all that, and they just they have better movement patterns. And my American players that played baseball growing up and football growing up just inherently have better movement patterns than the guys that specialize. So that's one of the things that, you know, there's a couple guys looking at from that side, what shoes they had growing up. Did they have a strength and conditioning background when they were younger? And so, you know, it's interesting to survey the retired guys, you know, that are in their 40s and 50s, how a lot of them grew up with that, you know, they played all the time, they played multiple sports, to the group of athletes now that specialize at a young age in basketball. So that's one of the things that we're looking at to see if that has any relationship to injury in our guys.
Sure. And so along those lines, when you're talking about looking at other correlating factors, is there anything that you're able to tell us? You know, obviously we know that don't specialize. That seems to be a common term here because we're seeing a lot of overuse of injuries in mm-hmm. younger kids that we didn't see until they were in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. So, you know, the evidence has shown that. What other types of things are you seeing that's evidence-based in, say, nutrition, training, even down to equipment?
Oof, okay. So from a nutrition standpoint, and that's a hard that's definitely a hard one in the NBA because of our schedule. But one of the things I would always go bat for with my teams was to provide the food for our guys. Because, you know, and what I always told them with the Magic and with the Rockets was that our guys will eat what we put in front of them. And the more meals I could get in front of them, the better, because I know they're going to eat. I remember my first couple years with the Magic, the guys are sort of on their own. And most guys wouldn't eat breakfast. They're like your normal college or high school student. Don't eat breakfast, just eat when they're hungry. And these guys I'm trying to put weight on and put size on. So just getting as much calories in front of them was huge. I would say, like, some of my guys, it was a 10, 10-pound difference if I provide the food or if I didn't provide the food. Which
what do you mean a 10-pound difference?
So, you know, if I'm looking at my bigs, and I did this with one of my guys, I did this with a few of my guys, is I saw, like, when they were with me during the season, which is normally when you would see them lose weight would be the normal. Well, because I had food in front of them all the time, and they were lifting all the time. You know, they were 10 pounds heavier than during the summer when we didn't provide food but had the same type of lifting environment and is actually less travel and less stress. So you'd think they'd put more weight on during the summer, and it is actually during the season when we were actually providing food to them on a continued basis.
Foods did you provide? Were you more of a high protein guy? Were you more of a, you know, 30-30-40 guy? How did you prescribe?
I was more of a guy of what they would eat minus the fried foods and the bad foods. So, I would pretty much, I got so bored of this, but the guys loved it. And, you know, I could serve them the greatest meal all day, but if it doesn't taste good, they're not going to eat it. So obviously you got to make it to what their palate, and to what these young guys like. So we primarily was, and I could say after every game and every practice, it was always the same, a chicken, a fish, depending on which chicken, fish, it was varied, and vegetables. That was pretty much for the last 7 years. I tried to throw in some other stuff like beef and pork or all that, even though that may not be, and they hated it. So I stayed with a chicken and a fish and vegetables, and the guys loved it. Every once in a while, just to break up the monotony, I throw something in there like a pizza, you know, once a month, or, you know, something just to keep them interested. Cause, you know, if you eat the same thing for, I don't care who you are, for 9 months, it does wear on you a little bit. But yeah, that was the prime staple was chicken, fish, and vegetables. Which when they go on the road, a lot of them would continue that and, you know, eat that when they're out eating on their own. I played around with supplements. You know, I've tried different things. I've tried everything from beet juice to creatine to beta alanine. you name it. But it was the player had to want it. I never forced any of this stuff on the guys. So if they said, hey, Joe, I'm looking at, you know, I want to use creatine. Well, then it was my job to sort of point them in the direction of, you know, safe creatine to use that's NSF certified, that, you know, there's no, nothing fishy with it, or other products, you know, of that nature, and to educate them on, hey, this is why this is important. That's one of the issues that we see a lot with our guys is them going to GNC and picking up stuff that they hear or marketing is selling them and sort of putting the brakes on that and say, hey, let us, you know, help you out with that. And that's also actually an area that with my new role that I'm trying to help out with is, you know, hey, let's make sure all our products are NSF certified or AIS certified or informed choice certified, so that we know what our products are getting.
Sure. And so I want to address that for a second, the supplements. You know, were you recommending any multivitamins, fish oil, CoQ10, you know, now there are some really kind of sexy supplements out there, cinnamon and turmeric, yeah, and, you know, all those different things. So you brought up some different websites. Obviously, you know, you've got NCAA, NSF, USADA, you know, that kind of stuff. So what websites are you using to make sure that these supplements have been vetted and they're not posing any problems, and that anybody in professional sports, college sports, IOC, et cetera, you know, if they were to go to these sites, take these supplements, it would keep them out of trouble? What's your recommendation on that?
Yeah, so I would say the main thing, you know, AIS, Informed Choice, and NSF have their own websites. USADA is a good one that you can't go wrong with them, or WADA. One of the things that I always make sure is anything our players take have that either NSF, AS sticker on it. If it doesn't have that sticker, they can't take it. So that's one of the important things is to make sure before it goes in their body, bring it to their trainer, strength coach first. And I tell the players that as well. Anything you guys are going to take, before you get dinged and have to sit out for several months, because you took a banned substance, bring it to me and I'll do my due diligence. Now, the other good thing is the NBA, we have a site, and this is just for the NBA, where we could call up and have it looked at and monitored as well.
Yeah, so all the professional sports have a committee just geared to help with that situation. So if there is a substance that you don't know, you could always call them up as a trainer, strength coach. But like I said, I always make sure it goes through me first, whatever a guy takes. And I make that very known to them. Bring whatever you want into me first. Do not take anything. And sometimes that's difficult because you have guys in Europe, you know, the European players, and they don't have the same, European players don't have the same regulations we have here. So it's really important to get that message across to our guys, and to let them know, hey, listen, make sure the one of these stickers are on it. And, you know, if need be, can you hear me okay, Jeremy?
Jeremy there?
Yeah, Joe, can you actually click on the video button and that'll turn your camera off and then it won't drop as much.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, this should be better. You were kind of cutting in and out a good bit, but.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, as far as that goes, you have the USADA and WADA. I know those are big ones, and we at the NBA use USADA. But again, it always has to go through the trainer. And then if I didn't know, I'd have to call up and, you know, ask guys questions on what they, you know, I'd call doctors up. Now, the thing I had for NBA is, We provide other meals for them. So I tell the guys, listen, you don't, there's not much you really need to take outside of this because we provide a meal. So from, you know, you can take a multivitamin or whatever, but you guys are eating pretty healthy or you're getting a lot of your bases covered. So as long as you're eating healthy, you know, I always preach to rather you guys eat healthy food than take supplements.
One of the things that I remember was, this new jet, I think Verizon made for NBA players, and it had extra space and dim lighting and stuff like that. Talk about some of the sleep concerns and how they're dealing specifically with sleep with NBA players.
Yeah, so, and that's a big area because, I mean, sleep is everything, as research has shown, and getting these guys dialed down after a game. So, you know, a lot of times we'll get done at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, and now you're asking the guys to, you know, bring down their heart rates, get that parasympathetic response, and relax and try to go to sleep in a normal hour. And a lot of these, my players wouldn't get to bed till 3 or 4 in the morning. And it just, it's tough. And that really wears on the body for, you know, as I mentioned earlier, from a hormone standpoint, it really sucks the life out of their hormones. So, you know, that's one of the things that we're trying to address. So, you know, from lighting to music, there's tones now that guys can wear on their headphones when they're on the plane to sort of bring them down. One of the things that I try to do when we're at home is I would have the guys try to do a hot tub after the game. Even though a lot of guys, you know, would cold plunge first for an injury standpoint, I'd have them finish off with hot tub just to activate that parasympathetic response and bring them down. Now, some guys did the opposite. So, you know, it was by case. Situation, but you know, that was one of the things that I found that I could do is get them in the hot tub for 5 minutes after the game, and it would sort of get them in that wind down mode. But yeah, sleep is such a crucial area, and you know, everybody has their theory or rationale on how to make it better, but a lot of it's not very practical. I remember one of the issues, and a lot of, you know, some you don't think about was, all right, well, if all our games are at 7 o'clock at night, well, it would make sense rather than practice at 10 in the morning to have practice at 7 o'clock at night, which sounds great in theory. But what we're finding out is that a lot of these players that have families would then, if their kids went off to school, never saw their kids the entire day. You know, which is something you don't think about, but these, you know, these guys have families too, and they want to see them. So that's where, you know, that was difficult, even though that might be in the best, you know, situation for them, to get better sleep and to be more regulated and have their cycle normal. Well, now they were missing their family. So, you know, it's one of those things you gotta, you know, look at it from all sides and see what makes sense.
All right. So what I'm understanding is using the hot tub afterwards helps to calm them down just to get them ready for sleep, to kind of balance their or normalize their routine to having different lighting or soothing music tones. So just because as a high school athletic trainer, I'm not going to have all those things available to me. But if there's one or two things that I can coach the kids on, because, you know, we might have a Thursday night football game and we get home at 11 and then they have to be back up here at school at 7:15 ready to go. Well, I need to be able to deal with the situation best and coach them, you know, and like you were saying, after the game, they want to go eat. So they'll go to CC's or, you know, wings or something like that. And,
you know, and that's an unfortunate thing. And I would like to say that, you know, us, you know, in the NBA who have access to everything, you know, it's even a problem that we still are having and can't, you know, fully address, because just sometimes logistically, you just can't do it. And, you know, guys need to eat afterwards still. And there's so many other variables that come into play. So you just try to do education's huge. And you try, you know, little things like here and there, maybe, you know, like a hot tub or, you know, tones or whatever, you know, that can help to get them out of the watching TV at night before they go to bed, or iPads and iPhones. You know, that's one of the things that, you know, we've been trying to educate our players on to, you know, put it down so that light doesn't keep you up. But there's no exact, you know, correct approach yet. You know, because life sometimes takes over, and, you know, you just got to do the best with what you have, unfortunately.
Joe, I cut out here for just a little bit, but then I got back on about, you know, recovery rather than cold tub, you know, hot tub, tones, that kind of stuff. So in your opinion, you know, in the experience that you have, you've got athletic trainers and strength coaches and some other sports medicine professionals that are listening to this. What are some generic recommendations that you can offer? Obviously, in the NBA world, it's just a different world, you know? I mean, it's you're getting a lot of money and a lot of resources. What about those, you know, the high schools or the colleges? They don't have as many resources. What's some generic advice that you can give?
Well, and I sort of alluded to this earlier. I would say, I always told my athletic trainers when I was a strength coach, you know, and being an athletic trainer, is I don't want you guys to have to work at all. Like, if you could sit around for the next 9 months and just twiddle your thumbs, that means we're doing good. So you first and foremost need a sound strength and conditioning program. And it can't be one of those where as soon as the season starts, it drops off, because the players are going to get fatigued. And I always told my players, I'm like, I try to match for every game you play, which you tear your body down, one lifting session to build your body back up. So if you have a competition, you got to do something the next couple days to build your body back up, because those competitions tear your body down. So I would say that's the first and foremost is, if you have a strong guys and it's consistent and they get in a routine, you're going to see less injuries. The other thing is soft tissue stuff and foam roll and massage and opening up area. You know, our like I said, our athletes get fixed in certain body positions because they've been playing a sport one way, and they build up a lot of scar tissue in certain areas because the body's not used in that way or what have you. So to use foam roller to get that out and do multiple sports and stretching techniques and keep it fresh. Like I always cross train the heck out of my guys when they weren't in season. And I always got frustrated that we did too much basketball when it wasn't basketball time. And, you know, I think that's a thing that us as trainers and strength coaches understand. And sometimes we have to educate the coaches on that. More is not always better. So, you know, when it's time to get the body ready for competition, you know, that takes about a month. So if you're adding basketball into that, you know, you're sort of putting the cart before the horse. You got to get their bodies ready for that. One of the things I always chuckled at is our first day of practices for, you know, you see this on many sports, is the hardest practice ever, you know, because coaches are trying to set a tone and all that. And, you know, it's all, you know, it happens all in all leagues, all levels, is getting that coach to understand, listen, you know, we're running a marathon here. Let's not run the marathon the first day, you know, to see if we could do it. You know, you got to build up and progress to that. So, you know, that's a huge thing, is getting the coaches buy in. But us as athletic trainers, strength coaches, we have to come with not, hey, I think that, you know, we should do this. It's, I think we should do this, and this is why. You know, what, you know, if we did this, and if they saw you, see you put some time and effort behind it and it's thought out, you know, I've come to feel, realize most of them are pretty accommodating and understanding, because again, in the end, you know, we want the guy's health at the forefront. So if we said, hey, listen, you know, first month, let's just lay off, you know, our sport a little bit and get our bodies prepared. And then once the season starts, they're yours. Let's just, you know, maybe do maintenance as the season goes on, to keep them in that zone. You know, but 90, their priority then is whatever that sport they're doing. And I think coaches understand it, because sometimes they get worried that it's going to become training and strength and conditioning over their sport. And it's like, no, just certain phases of the year. It's priority here and here. The rest of the time, you're the main priority. I just ask for a month or two, you know, at the beginning or at the end.
And so, you know, what it really sounds like is that some of the advice you're giving is not, I mean, it's really common sense. You know, a lot of it is being preventative. A lot of it is patient education. A lot of it is participant or coaching or parent education. A lot of it is making sure that people have the most accurate information and an abundance of it.
Yeah, and I mean, you said it. A lot of it is common sense, which, unfortunately, you know, tends to be more difficult because we try to reinvent the wheel sometimes. But you know, anything we do or I do, I take a step back and I look at it from 10 different angles. And how would a coach respond to this? How would a GM respond to this? How would a parent respond to this if I did this? And, you know, so that, I think that's very important, is, you know, to use common sense and to say, all right, well, listen, this might make all the sense in the world to me, but here are some of the pitfalls. So maybe this isn't, you know, in the best interest of the player or best interest of implementing, because I might have to do so much damage control at the end. You know, so and that's where that common sense comes into. And then having peers that you could bounce stuff off of and say, hey, listen, and I do that all the time, because they might look at something different than me and say, hey, I got an idea. I think it's the greatest idea. What do you think? And then I'll tell them that, and it turns out to be a completely awful idea, because I didn't think of, you know, I unfortunately didn't think of it the way they did. So, again, that a lot of what I've been able to do isn't necessarily because of book smarts or, you know, learning all this, you know, stuff. It's a lot of just networking, talking, working with people, hearing different sides of the story, and trying to use common sense to make everybody happy. And so many times I've found where there's a situation where you can make everybody in the group happy. By just doing it a certain way and problem solving. And I think that's, I guess, one of the areas that I've really strived to make better is problem solving stuff. Because a lot of times, you know, people see an issue and it's a problem and they just stop and give up. And you know, it's, it doesn't necessarily have to be that. There's, you know, more than one way to skin a cat. So being able to, and that comes with experience and seeing things. And again, you know, putting myself out there in different areas to say, all right, well, I saw this one time work in rugby. Maybe this is appropriate for this setting. You know, so I, you know, again, it comes back to, you know, people skills, common sense is always going to be a priority.
All right. Sure. Nicole is going to jump in with a question here. Go ahead, Nicole.
Okay, Joe. So you are able to communicate with a lot of different healthcare professionals. Do you work with any biomechanists?
I've gotten to know a few of them at the university level, and just, you know, working with them, and now that's becoming, now it's, you know, you have all these certifications like muscle activation therapy and a lot of guys in that area that are coming board that are very into the biomechanics of the players. So that is definitely, you know, an issue. There's a company out in California that now a lot of NBA guys go to. So to sit and just talk with them and talk shop, you know, they use these high profile cameras to monitor a guy squat jumping, and they can pick this, you know, they can look at the valgus of the knee and put a degree on that So yeah, I definitely, you know, talk to those guys and, you know, see what they try to, you know, learn what they're seeing from that level. So yeah, that's definitely an area that's becoming much, much more popular now among professional sports.
How important do you think it is to integrate something like a biomechanist into the team for prevention or?
Very important. I would say first and foremost from education. A lot of times we know what's going on, but we don't know like why or what's going on behind the scenes. So like for me, from a personal education point, it's huge. For a player, it's great to show them a video and, you know, and show them, hey, this is what's going on here in a biomechanics lab. Because now they're able to understand why they're doing that. And that's one of the things I always try to educate my players, like, hey, I'm not just doing this exercise to be a mean person. This is why. Like, look, your hips buckling in here, your knee is, you know, turning out here. So it's very important for the education of the player and the education of myself and the medical staff, because it gets the player buy-in. It gets the general manager buy-in, you know, because now you're actually able to show it through a lab setting or, you know, through video or what have you. And now we're able to take that information and we're able to data mine it. So now we can look at every NBA player, and this is something that's in the works right now, that has squat jumped, and to see, all right, who's had severe valgus in their knees moving in movement on their jumps. All right, let's look 5 years later. How many of them tore their ACLs? Is that really something that causes an ACL tear? And we don't know the answer to that yet. I mean, that's something we're looking into, but that's very crucial to injury prevention down the road.
Going back to the biomechanical testing, there's a couple companies out in California that mm-hmm. do this. So what, can you give us the company's name that works?
So, I mean, there's a couple of them. So, one of the big ones is P3. That's in Santa Monica, Santa Clara. Then there's Sparta. That's in San Francisco. A lot of them use force plate. A lot of them use high-def cameras from different angles to measure these guys' movement patterns. Those are the big ones. They're big with the NBA right now. But it's becoming more of a common thing. I know University of Houston just invested in some of that equipment and force plate stuff. So I found it really beneficial for teaching my players why, which is huge, because once they know why, once they see a benefit of it, they're going to do it. Like, hey, this is why, this is how it can make you better. They're going to do it. So it's really important from an education standpoint.
Right. All right. Well, this is where I sign off. I'm going to let you and Nicole and Jeremy continue on with this conversation. Okay. Joe, I always love talking with you, man.
Anytime, Jeff.
I wish we had some more time where we could just sit down and talk shop. And, you know, you bring up a lot of really great ideas, and I appreciate everything that you're doing for athletic training and for sports medicine and all the progress that you're making. So
appreciate it.
This is where I sign off. And always, Jeremy, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm going to sign off one more time here. This is Dr. Josh Yellen with the University of Houston Master of Athletic Training Program. And if you want more information about our program, it's www.hhp.uh.edu/MAT. Talk to you later. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Nicole, you got any? Okay. Well, Joe, you guys covered all the questions that I had typed up. So you and Dr. Yellen did a great job. I'm going to give 1 second for anybody in the live chat, which is Doc Hale, Rob DeJohn, Carlos Presas, Israel Montano, Jason Moore, Casey Powell, and Blake George. If any of you guys have any questions, type those in. So, Joe, if someone wants to get a hold of you and mm-hmm. ask you more or find out more about some of the work that you're doing there with the NBA Players Association, then how are they going to do that?
My email address, I don't know. I know you have that. Jeremy, do you want to just provide that to anyone that needs it? You're more than welcome to.
Sure, are you okay saying that here on the air?
Oh, yeah. It's Joe, Rogowski, Rogowski, @nbpa.com.
All right. So if you want to get a hold of Joe, find out some more about the data, all the research they're doing, maybe having them talk at one of your conventions. You know, you can email them and see what he's available to do. But I really love your approach that everything is data. We talked to somebody the other day, and data is not my forte. So there's like people that like you that can bridge the gap between all the data and people like me in the athletic training room and making it work. And so it's so important for me to be able to talk to you or people who are doing stuff like that. So, Joe, thanks so much for joining us here on the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Do you have any go-to resources that you might send somebody to?
In what regards?
maybe just to find out more. I know you mentioned several things like...
We have a Players Association health page. That's on the NBPA website. That I've started building about our retired players' cardiac screening program and some of the stuff in the news. I would say that from my side. And I don't know, anything else you have, Jeremy, that you're looking for?
Nope. That was pretty much it. Just in if you have a go-to resource place that you like to find information, but like you said, you're building that resource there on the NBA Players Association website, so...
Yeah, my mine's more phone calls. I use a phone for my resources. I call people. That's usually where I do most of my work is on the phone.
Gotcha. See, that's a lost art nowadays. Now everything's email.
Yeah. No. And then more importantly, I like to see the people in person and just meet with them because I think that goes a lot further than email or talking to them on the phone. As far as helping yourself out down the road.
All right. Very cool. Well, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. I didn't mention it at the very beginning, but this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Rogowski, which is Rogowski. So this will be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Rogowski, where you can find the show notes or links that we might have mentioned here. I'll type Joe's email in there so you can have that as well. Again, but that's joe.rogowski@nbpa.com. Is that what you said? .org?
.com.
All right. So I'll type that in there. Also, Frio Hydration is the official hydration equipment provider for the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Make sure that you mention the Sports Medicine Broadcast if you buy something from there. And we'll be talking at SPATS coming up down to South Padre. So if you're there, I'm looking forward to it. I know several of the people in the live chat will be there. And the Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Update. Joe, I hope you get a chance to talk at the Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Update because I've really enjoyed listening because I didn't do much talking today. So I really enjoyed listening to what you say. And I think it really is beneficial to athletic trainers. So if you get a chance, reach out to Bob, say, hey, I want to speak, depends on your schedule,
okay. But
it's a great conference. And I really think people would enjoy hearing you again.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you.
So I am Jeremy Jackson on Twitter. I'm PHS Sports Med. Joe, do you have a Twitter?
No, I don't. My wife yells at me, but no. It's probably for the better.
Yeah. All right. Well, then for Jeremy, Sports Medicine Broadcast, Nicole joining us live and doing some typing in there for me, doing a great job. That is a wrap.